All right, Dylan and Christina.
Yes.
Dylan and Christina, you guys are on the streets?
Yes.
Kind of Skid Row, MacArthur Park?
Yeah, MacArthur Park mostly, yeah. Skid Row sometimes.
I'm kind of nebulous. I'm all over the place. So. Right.
You guys are a couple?
Yes.
How long you guys been together?
About 7 months.
7 months.
6 months, 7 months.
How'd you guys meet?
You want to tell them or should I?
Well, I hand out cigarettes every day. So I get 2 packs. It's 2 for $5. So I hand out one pack and then I keep the other one. And I handed him a cigarette. And then the next day I needed dope and he gave me dope. And I didn't even I was so sick. I didn't even think about it.
And then, she gave me some that day because I was sick.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even remember that part.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I gave him
your
dope.
Your friend had it, and you asked your friend for me.
Oh.
So you asked him to help me.
Well, that's why he helped me. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, we just kind of ended up hitting it off after that. We kind of have been pretty much inseparable.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what life is like for a couple on the streets down there.
It's different for us, I think, than most couples.
It's what?
It's different for us than most couples because we have our own lives. A lot of times what happens on the streets is they're together all the time, 24/7, and they just overload and then they're not together, you know? It's just so extreme.
We can't stand each other because they're just constantly together every moment.
Yeah. You know? And we kind of we have our own lives, but we do them together, I guess. So I think that's why we can kind of make it. Mm-hmm. We have our own friends and our own, but every time we run into each other, we are just together, you know, it's just kind of so, but it's hard because when people see something that they like, a lot of times they, and they don't have it, they want to get in between you, you know? But I think we do pretty good at fending that off in the nicest way possible. So,
how old are you guys?
I am 34.
I'm 27.
And you, where are you from originally?
I'm from Phoenix.
And I'm from Pomona.
You're from Phoenix?
Yeah.
Phoenix. And,
well, New River, technically, I guess, but no one knows where New River is.
Your drugs now are what?
Huh?
What drugs are you using?
I do pretty much whatever's there. I don't do PCP or crack, but I do fentanyl regularly. That's obviously unavoidable with the physical withdrawals. And then meth, pretty much whatever's there.
And I do Fetty, you know, and then I do alcohol, pretty much everything except for PCP. Because I do crack too, because my friend does it a lot, so I end up doing it mostly too.
Yeah, I've had several friends die on PCP, so.
Yeah,
PCP is a crazy one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you want to lose your mind, that's the drug you
need. Yeah. I had a friend jump off a 6-story building. So it's not for me.
What is, like you guys see how crazy these drugs are. You see what they do to people. You see how many people have died.
Oh, yeah.
What makes you do them?
You want to go? I want to think on that one for a second.
I mean, I started really mostly doing Fetty when my dad passed away and my little sister passed away.
It helps.
7 months ago.
Numb the pain?
Yeah, because my dad overdosed from Fetty. And then I called my sister and then she hung herself after that. And then my son and daughter actually passed away 2.5 months ago.
Your son and daughter?
Yeah, from so.
How'd they pass?
I guess they tried to say that my son's heart wasn't pumping enough blood to his body, but he was in the hospital for 2 days with the flu, and he had a needle mark in his arm, but they didn't report any needle marks or nothing, no shots or anything in his paperwork. So I don't know why he had a needle mark in his arm.
How old was he?
He was 7. His birthday is May 31st. This is actually the first year that I'll have without him.
Whose care was he in?
He was in his foster mom's care. Mm. His foster mom and dad had him.
So sorry about that. And you, your childhood, Dylan was
Yeah, I was adopted by my aunt, my dad's sister, at 2. And then, like, I was molested actually by her husband. So I never really got along with him, you know? And then my dad had told my mom, like, if she didn't sign me away to her, his sister, that he was gonna kill her ki other kids, you know? Told my mom that. So, of course, she didn't want that, you know? So she signed her to my aunt.
That's a rough childhood. It's a rough life. What were your teenage years like?
I lost all my siblings, you know? And I lost my mom, too. She hung herself when I was a teenager, actually.
How many siblings did you have?
I had eight.
Yeah.
I had four sisters and four brothers.
And how many of them are gone?
All of them.
From what?
Different things. One of my sisters and one of my brothers had cancer, and then I had a twin actually, and he got killed in a drive-by shooting. And then my other siblings, three of them had killed themselves, you know, because my mom did, so they did the same thing.
Let me just say, you have many siblings. You know that, right? Your family is at the park and they all love you so much. You know that, right? So don't forget that. You have so many people that love you. So many people. Okay?
Did your siblings grow up in the foster system as well?
Yeah.
And your parents were just not capable of doing
My dad
anything?
was in jail a lot. He was in prison a lot. And then my mom did crack.
Yeah. How long have you been on the streets now?
I would say like 2 years. Yeah. Because I had my own apartment actually for a while. And then I lost it.
That's a lot of pain to overcome.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Christina, tell me about your childhood.
Pales in comparison to that. My parents are amazing. I just want to start with that. I have an amazing parents. I love them so much. But it's hard being a parent. There's no book on how to do it. So I was a difficult child. I didn't get in trouble or anything, but I had anxiety and, you know, cried all the time. And my mom had postpartum pretty bad and bipolar that she didn't, she was in denial of. So I was kind of not. She loved me, but she didn't like me, in her words. And then I have an older sister who hated me from the time I hit puberty. And I moved out at 14 after they wanted to. My mom tried to get me to foster care, and my dad wanted to marry me off because he didn't want me to have to go to foster care. So I ended up moving out. But they didn't want to be legally liable for negligence. So I just tried to be as good as I could so that they wouldn't get in trouble, because they're not bad people by any means. But they, yeah, it was a complicated childhood. Very complicated childhood.
How did drugs come into your life?
Well, I dropped out of 8th grade, and I started using, I think it was meth when I was 12. Oh no, it was triple C's, Corsin cough and cold. And I swore when I was 18 I'd buy a bunch of them, and haven't bought them since. But I
So,
was,
like cough syrup?
it's pills, and they're for like high blood pressure or something.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I was popping 11 or something a day. And I started throwing up blood one day when I was like 12, I think. And realized I was probably had an ulcer or something. And so that kind of freaked me out. But then I hate saying this, but my my mom struggled a lot with me. And we have a great relationship now, but she struggled a lot. Didn't know how to parent me, which I don't know how anyone could parent me. And so she would do stuff like kick me out and then panic about kicking me out and put Amber Alerts out for me, say I ran away and, you know, and was just wrecked with guilt and worry after kicking me out. So that was confusing for both of us, you know what I mean? And I'm sure very confusing for my father. And my sister felt neglected because even though I was getting a lot of attention, it was, in my view, it was all negative attention, but in her view, it was attention, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that made her very resentful towards me. When I was 11, her friend tried to molest me. Her friend was 20 years old, and I told her about it, and she said, I can't just drop all my friends because you dress like a whore. And I remember I was in an outfit she bought me. Not that it should matter. I was 11. But I was like, I'm in an outfit you bought me. Like why? How am I dressed like a whore? Why would you dress me like a whore? So ever since that day, we kind of our relationship just wasn't great. And then I moved out at 14, maybe 15, and lived in a bomb shelter. And yeah, I almost converted to Mormonism. And I've never really looked back as far as living with my parents. Our relationship got better, but I was using drugs, you know, consistently. I dropped out.
You were out of the house by what time? What age?
I want to say 14, but it may have been 15 because I was eighth grade. I dropped out. I went to a college prep school, but I dropped all my high school classes and then just took the night classes that were college classes to try and get my associates. And I worked in the 99 cent store. But prior to that, when I was 12, I was dating a 19 year old.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was dating a 19 year old when I was 12. So that's kind of what got it started. He would tell me either I can take you home to your parents who are going to beat you or punish you for, you know, being past your 6 o'clock curfew, or you can have sex with me. And that's how I lost my virginity. And so from there, I just started like kind of going from one guy to one long-term relationship to the next with older guys to get out of the house, I guess. And I didn't have any friends at school. I didn't have any friends at all. I just had my boyfriends, you know? I don't know.
Is there addiction in your family?
Not my parents.
No?
My extended family, yeah, but not my parents. They're addicted to working out. They're athletes. I'm so proud of them. They put on races, and they're retired now, but they're amazing. They just rode across Arizona, did a 615-mile ride in 6 days on their bicycles. They're 72 years old and 62 years old. They're amazing. Absolutely incredible. Like, you guys got to stop doing so much.
Your relationship is better with them now?
Oh, yes. My mom's awesome. My dad's awesome too. They're amazing. Yeah, I talk to my mom every day. My mom credits me for her being a different person now, but I credit her for me being a different person now. My dad and I don't talk a lot, but it's kind of like a, you know, like he's my dad. Like, you know, it's just like if we need to talk about something, you know, he's on speakerphone and shit. Like, oh hey, what up? You know, but. I'm super proud of him. And I think my mom and I, our relationship got a lot better because years back I got MRSA on my heart, on my tricuspid, and a piece broke off and went to my hip bone, and I was pregnant at the time. So I was trying to quit using, and I nowhere would take me because I was a liability, because I had this extreme. I woke up one day screaming, just screaming. I woke myself up screaming, and I thought it was back pain. And I just couldn't stop screaming. The paramedics had to come in with one of those like whale gurneys, you know, where they were like hanging down, mm-hmm. and take me out of the room. And they thought I was seeking drugs, but it was just unbelievable pain. And for 7 months, I dealt with that. And eventually I went into labor without realizing I was in labor. Because the pain was so extreme, I didn't know I was in labor. I was just so used to the pain. I thought my contractions were normal pain. And so I had my baby on my friend's couch. And the paramedics, finally, they believed me after that. But after that, I ended up having 3 blood transfusions. I couldn't lay down or stand up. I was in a wheelchair the whole time. And they... From sitting in that way, I got dual pneumonia. My lungs filled up with fluid. They had to stick 3/4-inch tubes in each lung, drain my lungs. I had a hole in my lung because a piece of the vegetation from the MRSA broke off and went to my lung. Piece also had gone and broken off and went to my hip bone, but we didn't know it yet. But on a follow-up X-ray of my lungs, they saw deterioration to my hip bone. I have like 60% of my hip bone, and they realized it was my hip bone. It wasn't my back that was causing all the pain, because it felt like it was my back, you know, the whole time. I ended up having 104 point something fever, something like that, for days, and then decided I'm going to go party for my birthday. So I was like, oh, see you guys later, and checked out of, you know, AMA from the hospital. And even though I was a terrible patient, I was so mean. I was terrible. The nurses loved me enough where they checked for me every hour and found me in the lobby, eventually passed out pretty much dead. And my heart rate was at like 4 and my blood pressure was at like 200. I went into cardiac arrest and they had to bring me back to life, which I didn't know about. And I woke up cussing the nurses out. Uh-huh. It was terrible. Uh-huh. It was not good. But then I spent 2 months in a nursing home. And I think after all that, my mom and I got a lot closer. And they were giving me fentanyl every 3 hours. And I was doing heroin. I was shooting up heroin into my IV. Lovely, I know. Mm-hmm. But that was a lot. That was a long 2 years. And I'm grateful for it. I am, because it showed me I'm a tough son of a gun. Mm-hmm. But it also showed me that my mom is a tough son of a gun, and my parents are with me when the chips are down, you know. I haven't talked to my sister in over a decade, but and I was married for 2 years.
How many children do you have? Just one?
I have 2.
You have 2?
Yes.
Where are they?
One's with my ex-husband, and one is with my the father of her father and his family. So, and he has a wife now and a beautiful son, and he's a great, they're both great dads. I have nothing bad to say about either of them. I think that my ex-husband would have done things differently if he could go back. He did, he, being my daughter's father, I'll never say anything bad about him, but I think he wanted to give his dad a grandbaby, and he wanted a baby so bad that he was willing to marry me just to have a kid, and didn't think of the way that that might, you know, affect me in the long run and affect him. Mm. But I know everything he did out of love for her, you know, because I wasn't using, I was a stay-at-home mom with her. And then he sent me to California for a mommy getaway because I was breastfeeding. And the world's your oyster when you get back. And then I got here and he wouldn't answer the phone. There was no hotel, like he said there was, nothing. He just, like, left me here, I guess. But, so that was hard. And I didn't think anything was wrong. So I just was blindsided by that, you know. But I told him, he got the house with his 401k. He did all the work. He got the house, everything. I told him, I won't take anything from you. But he got an attorney anyways and ended up, it ended up being, not a very good divorce. It should have been a lot easier because in the end, I ended up keeping to all my promises anyways. But I'm proud of him because my daughter's beautiful and happy and healthy and he's...
How often do you talk to her?
I don't. She doesn't want me to, and I honor that. So I'd love to talk to her. I've tried to send anonymous gifts. You know, I can say it's from you or whatever, but he won't. My sister, I think, got involved. I know she got involved. My sister got involved, and she had a child to, quote unquote, because I was stealing her thunder. So she got pregnant 5 weeks after I did, even though she said she never wanted kids. Stopped taking her birth control pill. Moved from Seattle to Arizona, not telling her, the father of the kid, until she got to Arizona, and then said, you better move out here if you want to see your son. But being that my daughter was around and that I was around, she knew that the tension wasn't going to be on her. So she did a lot of things to make it very hard for me to maintain the life that I had created for myself, you know? And if she watches this, I would still love to hear from her. She's my sister. I love her. And, you know, and now our kids go to school together. So that's kind of wild because my daughter has no idea, you know, like what happened. They're 2 weeks apart and they're... but my parents don't get to see her. I don't know. It's hard.
Tell me about your life now. So you guys are on the streets and what does your day look like? How do you make money?
I go out usually and I'll go boost. So like I'll go to a store and take whatever I can, you know? Some days I can, of course.
And then you sell it to a fence who...
Yeah, sell it to, like, one of the vendors right there. Mm-hmm. And they always hassle you or just want to pay low, you know? But I always try to get them to pay at least half of what it originally costs in the
store.
Have
you ever been caught stealing?
Yeah, I have. I got arrested, I think, like, twice. But I was only in there for... I think it was, like... it was overnight, you know.
The jail?
Yeah, it was overnight. And then I got out the next morning. And then the last time they caught me, I had like 28 warrants. But they were all misdemeanors, you know.
Christina, what do you do for money, or do you rely
on... I'm a unique case. I know it's going to sound unbelievable, but I operate in the margin that I... Stop. Sorry, he's picking at something on my back. I operate in this margin because no one else does. But I'm super fucking nice, man. Mm-hmm. I am very generous. Anything that I have, I share. Down to the last penny that I have.
How does that make you money?
Because if I need anything, and I don't do it for that purpose, but the universe provides, someone will provide. But I honestly am a minimalist. I will live off $10 in a week if I need to. I just won't eat.
Feel like everybody around is more so willing to give her that dollar or that five, you know, $10 because of how nice she is to everybody and how giving.
If I come up, everybody comes up.
Yeah.
I mean, if I get $50, I'll take five of it and I give, and I hand it out to everyone.
That's nice.
And it's, it, it makes me feel good. It's for me too. It makes me feel good.
Is this a life that you guys are happy with? You'll be doing this the rest of your lives?
Yeah.
I don't want to do the fentanyl anymore because I.
Maybe not that though. Maybe no drugs. Yeah.
I mean, I want to do drugs for sure, but I want to do drugs. I want to do the drugs. I don't want them to do me. And I
don't think anybody just does fentanyl.
Yeah, exactly. but I've never been, I don't want to do I don't want to do opiates. I've never been addicted to anything though. I've never had an issue with addiction. I can take it or leave it on cigarette, everything. It's just opiates. But I feel like it's the only thing that makes me, that holds me back from like really like being as helpful as I want to be. Like, I really want to like help people, and it's the thing that makes me selfish, because if I'm sick enough, like, I have to find dope or I'm going to be sick out on the street, and I still will give my last dab and be sick. And
she always she'll smoke her resin, you know, and give all of the dope.
I smoke the resin that's in my pipe and I give all the dope away, you know. And it's like, but then people have to see me sick and then they feel bad, and it's like, I just wish I could just not do it, and then, but I would still be out there, even if I didn't do it, 100%.
Really?
Yes, because there's a lot of people say, well, why don't you get a grant? Why don't you get this? But you don't see any people who do outreach, really outreaching, because they're not relatable. Like, I have gangsters and all these people talk to me, you know, tell me things that they might not tell other people, and like tell me, you know, from their hearts, like how they feel, and the hugs that I give.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, people will wait around where they know I'm going to show up. People you'd never expect to wait around for this just to get a hug from me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a sexual thing always either. It's from females and males. I ask them how their day is. I ask them how their mom is doing. I ask them, you know, even the vendors.
Mm-hmm.
I ask them if their kids still sick. There's actually a lot
more vendors. There's a lot of vendors.
Yeah.
I would have never thought, you know? Because I don't really talk to the vendors too much like that, except for if I'm selling something to them, you know?
But, and I don't sell. I don't boost, and I don't sell anything. But I mean, when I get my food stamps, because I don't believe I should get food stamps because I'm on drugs, I should just quit doing drugs and buy food. But a friend of mine who doesn't do drugs signed me up for it. He acted as my representative and did it, which was nice. But I was like,
it sounds like you guys are pretty happy with your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I am not happy with the fentanyl use. I wish I could quit so much. I don't want to be on it. I don't want to be on it.
But by remaining on the streets, you're kind of around it, and it's.
But to get off the streets,
it's gonna be awfully hard. I've never seen anybody just quit fentanyl because they're.
But to get off the streets, I have to quit fentanyl. You know what I mean? And the physical withdrawal is a lot. And then it's just a lot. And I have an issue. My biggest mental health issue, I think, is steps. When there's steps to things, I get very overwhelmed. How would you explain it?
If you have to do one thing,
like getting food stamps,
getting food, or like going to get drugs, or going to get something to drink more so.
Yeah, like transitioning from like people,
one thing to
people,
another.
It's very, very, very hard for me. Because
I have to do it how you want to do it, in the order that you would like to do it.
Well, not so much that. It's more. It's like I just get I can't look at each step individually, and then I have non-specific anthropophobia, I guess, which is a fear of people, and I'm not afraid of them hurting me physically, but I'm afraid of them being mean.
Well, you're in a part of town where the people are meaner than anywhere I've ever
seen. Oh, not to me.
No, not to her.
No, they're
not to her.
I've experienced more love in L.A. than anywhere ever.
I've gotten a lot more because of her, you know? Like, people are so nice to her that I haven't seen like that before, you know?
If I go out there, I can literally ask you. Like, there's these people who yell. Sorry, I'm, like, spitting tears. There's these people who yell, like, you know, about the Jesus stuff, you know? And I try to talk to him because I have autism. I'm on the spectrum and it's very loud. And I'm like, it's hard for me to, even if I, you know, I do want to hear what you have to say, but it's hard for me because it just triggers me. It's very hard for me to listen to you. And I'm actually friends with a lot of them now. But part of the reason was I said, how many people have I helped at this park? And about 100 people raised their hand. And I said, how many people have you helped?
Nobody raises
And no one does. And that now they do. Now they bring food and now they're quieter. And they, because I mean, I literally, I make, like people say that they help others. And I love that. I love it. But I'm, it's my whole life is doing that. And I also find that because there a lot of them are junkies and that oxytocin acts on the same receptors as opiates, when they start doing nice things for each other and bonding, it feels really good. Yeah. And I think they're more, and this is just my theory, I think they're more prone to do it and it starts a chain reaction. So when I'm around, I mean, like people get along.
People would get along that wouldn't. You know,
they don't steal from each other. Yeah, they don't steal.
They don't try to come up on one another or go sell their stuff.
Like when they're sleeping,
You know, like they won't just go and take their stuff or their dope. You know, they'll actually leave it there.
And if I catch them, then I scold them, and they feel you know all embarrassed and ashamed, and they put it back. And I offer to watch their stuff. I'll sit there for 6 hours and watch their stuff while they sleep, so that they can actually because it's hard for the guys. So and much harder for guys now, than like it is for women.
I see somebody steal something from somebody else, I'll steal it from them and give it back to the actual owner of it, you know?
Yeah, it's just, it'll be a guy, the torch is all he has, you know? Yeah, he's got nothing.
That's his life right there, is that torch.
And this dude's got all these nice threads on it, and he goes and steals that torch. I'm like, man, that is all that is that man's entire life, and you just took it from him.
Yeah.
Give the torch back.
You guys are okay living in a world where things are just so upside down and people are so...
I remind myself it's not normal and it's not okay. I
mean, there's a better life out there.
Oh, of course. But it's a life, though. My mom said it best because I have an album called the LA Album that I send my mom. My mom's just a part of it. I add photos to it of the real, what LA really is like from our viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And my mom said, God, I wish I had the quote directly, but she said, I worried you didn't have a life, but it may not be a normal life, but it's a life. There's laughter. It's not all good, and it's not, you're not glorifying anything, but there's good in it and bad in it, and there's substance to it, you know? And I try to live in a way where if I should pass away and my daughter or my mom or dad came to see what I was like, you know, in my final years, they wouldn't hear anything bad. You know, no one could actually say anything bad. I want them to hear good stories.
Where do you guys live?
Wherever we're at.
You don't have a tent or anything?
No. Mm. I don't do tents. I don't like tents.
Nah. Do you sleep?
No, I really try not to.
I wish he would sleep more. I sleep when I can, but it's a lot easier for me being a female. Being a female on the street's so much easier. I know a lot of women say it's not, and they're
full of shit.
Can we cuss?
Yeah, they're full of it.
Full of shit. It's so much easier for females. If you paint yourself as a victim, you're gonna be a victim.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on the streets 12 of the past 17 years, not, you know, accumulatively, not consecutively, and I've never been raped on the streets. I've been attacked. I've had certain things happen, but I can count on one hand the amount of times that's actually happened to me where it hasn't been a situation that I've been like, oh, well, I fucked up there. I'm not going to do that again. You know what I mean? Where I've been a true victim, it's been maybe 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm glad it happened because it was handled in a way where, you know, that person knows now that they can't treat people like that, you know? But women act like they say how they're victims all the time and, oh, this and that happened to me. Well, we've been developing women's intuition for tens of thousands of years. You guys got us out of the food chain with your sex drive. I mean, it's true. You guys got, that's the most powerful thing in nature. that's something that it's a very recent thing that that you guys you will get in trouble for just raping us or whatever. It used to be where that's just what happened. Mm-hmm. And for tens of thousands of years, we've had to develop this intuition on how to handle that. And women have just forgotten that. Like, we have instincts. We know it's women's intuition. We know it's very rare that you don't have some like, all right, this guy's, but it's, you know, it's women are like, well, fix him, you know.
And I've done better, it. You know?
Yeah, like, oh, I'll fix him.
Most
I can do
not
it.
Gonna work.
He won't do that with me. You know, like, and it's a very pro-victim society we live in. It is. And I think it's because we're trying to switch things up from a paternal or a patriarchal society to a matriarch, and that's not going to work.
You don't think that's going to work?
Hell no. I think women are good at a lot of things.
Maybe not.
Yeah, we differ on this a little bit, but I just think that I think it's going to take time. And from an evolutionary standpoint,
it's been a
blink of an eye. We haven't had enough time.
Yeah.
We also haven't had enough time to learn to fail. We're the only species that fails and doesn't die. There's no lions living in their mom's basement at 40 years old, you know? So, I mean, we're having to like speed evolve, which is crazy. You know, there's like interviews and school and, you know, relationships and monogamy, or it's crazy. It's crazy that it's just forced on us and men, especially. Like Weinstein, not Epstein, he's a dick, yes. But Weinstein, he's just a fat, ugly Jew that was, you know, those girls were not bitching when they were getting $2 million or however much per job.
Man.
They could have gone to a different manager, you know? That's just the way it is. But, and I feel like men are demonized for that. And because I have that mentality, and because I am not a victim, and I will see through the bullshit, that shit doesn't happen to me. It just doesn't, you know? I've had very few things happen to me, and they were things that I was like, oh, whoops. You know, like,
I hope that continues.
I mean, oh, no, I get in trouble, but not that kind of, not the type of trouble. I mean, women say, oh, I was raped by 8 guys last night. I'm like, you just met me 5 minutes ago. Why are you telling me this if it was so traumatizing?
Yeah.
You know, like, and didn't that happen to you last week? Shouldn't you do something to change that? Maybe don't get in the car with someone that you don't know. Or if it's rape on the right, go left, you know? Like, if it's rape 30, stay in your tent. Like, just, And tents are another thing. Everyone knows you're there.
Right.
Like,
that's your location.
You can't see anyone else, but they all know exactly where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and then they put a lock on their tent, which just tells everyone you're not there.
Right.
So it's like, I have one bag. That's what you saw out there, those 3 bags. That's more shit than I've owned. Sorry, stuff that I've owned in a long time, probably 2 years.
Yeah.
Do you guys want a better life?
A better life? Well, I want a fentanyl-free life, but I'm very proud of my life. I don't operate in a way that I wouldn't be proud to tell someone other than the drugs. I'm proud of everything that I do.
What are you proudest of?
What?
What are you proudest of in your life?
My unconditional love for people and my willingness to not to give everything that I have and to inspire others to do the same. I love that I inspire others to be loving and be kind, and I love that shit. I'm so proud of that. Like, that makes me so fucking happy. Like, that's my proudest achievement. And I hope that, like, if my daughter comes and, like, asks about me one day, that she'll at least see that, you know? So.
Do you feel, like, shame or anything regarding your kids?
Oh, of course.
I'm sure.
I feel, of course, yes. And I know my life's not normal. Sorry, I'm getting tears all over you, my bad. Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Of course. And I think that's what keeps me somewhat, like, normal-ish. Because I know it's not a normal lifestyle. It's not okay. And it's... you should be ashamed. Of course, you should be ashamed. 100%. And I'm, when I hear women and men say, oh, I want my babies back, oh, I'm like, okay, well, you're telling me, another drug addict, that you want your children back.
After you just took a hit.
Yeah, like, yeah. What am I going to do about it? Why did you take that hit then? Like, yeah, go do something about it then. You know, like, go do something about it. Like, my kids are happy and healthy, and I should be in their lives, but I am clearly in no place. I am no mental place to be in their lives. And as much as I would love to be, it's just not the time in my life right now. And I just recently found out some things that have made it really hard for me, because I've thought I've been a fuck up for the past 10 years. And I've realized recently that the things I thought made me a fuck up weren't true necessarily. And so now I have to start doing stuff. Like, I feel like I need to start working towards something, because, like, I was fired from my job. I managed resort operations for an international timeshare resort. My sister got me fired. I got a call from my mother in the parking lot 5 minutes after being fired for dealing drugs at my job, which I didn't do. And my mom was like, oh, I heard you got fired for dealing drugs at your job. And I was like, how do you know that? But I didn't even think about it, mm-hmm. you know? And she said, oh, your sister told me, and I asked her why she's so involved in your life. And I just brushed that aside. But I just recently realized she got me fired from my job. Mm-hmm. And I just always thought they saw something I didn't see. Like, I guess they just knew I was a fuck up. But now I'm like, no, you were just a fuck up because you let that shit get to you. So it's my fault now that the past 10 years I've been, you know what I mean? And I've always thought it was my fault, but now it's my fault, and I have to do something about it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, I have to – now I feel like – and I don't even know where to start. I have no idea where to start.
Well, the drugs are going to be
– yeah, of course, of course, of course.
Everyone sees about you.
Of course. Mm-hmm. The thing that people in a – and I'm not making excuses by any means. Do I not say this all the time? I 100% agree. That's why I give most of my drugs away, because I try to cut back as much as I can.
Not do as much, or do it.
Yeah, I give as many of them away as I can, and I pretty much just smoke resin.
She gives a lot away.
It's very hard on the street to quit something that makes you, especially as a female, and a relatively attractive female, symmetrical, proportionate, it's very difficult. Because I'm going to look like shit. I'm going to, you know, be gross to be around. So the people that would normally help me out, and I'm going to be a burden, are going to be like, ew. Or they're going to be freaked out because they're going to think I need medical attention. They're going to take me to a hospital, and the hospitals don't. No, they're fed up with it, understandably so. You
the
know?
One right there by the park, they don't do shit.
But understandably so.
Yeah.
I mean, so they deal with that shit all day long.
Yeah, they go in there all day, all night.
You know, the paramedics show up and they're throwing people around. Like, and I'm like, people get so mad about it. I'm like, dude, what do you expect, man? There's people that didn't do this to themselves that they mm-hmm. should be tending to, and they're coming here dealing with you guys. Mm-hmm. Like,
they
you
get
know?
A body every day. They get a body.
Yeah, well, and it's like the Narcan shit. I'm sorry, yeah, Narcan's the worst invention on earth.
Every day.
Have you guys OD'd?
I never have.
No.
Not even close. But it's the worst invention, because honestly, it's thinning the herd. Because if you get people always get mad at me, because if I see someone overdose, and I've seen them overdose, it's not their very first time overdosing, I'll Narcan them 10 times, which makes them real sick when they get up. Real sick. But guess what? Don't do it again. Don't fucking overdose again. Know your drug or don't do it. You know? I mean, that's the way it is, because they don't realize when they're out that I'm running around crying, freaking out. Oh my God, this person's gonna die. And, you know, I feel responsible, and this person's gonna lose their life right in front of me. And they wake up and they're like, hey, where's the next hit? Mm-hmm. You know? Because people are like, don't Narcan them, they're gonna be sick. Well, maybe they should be. And I would expect the same for me. If I overdose, Narcan the fuck out of me. And I tell everyone when I do like Xanax, I say, if you find me and I'm all fucked up on Xanax, take all my shit. Make sure I'm safe, but take all of my shit.
That's
and don't
give differ. It back. That's where we differ. If I say I overdose, don't Narcan me. I'm trying to go out.
No, no, with you, no, no, no. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I will Narcan the fuck out of you, so you're sick. So you're sick as fuck, but you won't do it again.
are you? Do you have suicidal thoughts sometimes?
Yeah,
you do.
I do every day.
Yeah, with a family history like yours, you got to be watched.
She helps me a lot with it.
Yeah, but I'm also pro-suicide, but I feel like he's not, I don't feel like he's really suicidal. I feel like he's looking for a reason to live, and I feel like there's a difference. You know
that's
what I mean?
That's especially true.
I don't, because...
What do you see in Dylan that makes him so attractive?
There's a lot of stuff. I'm not really one that's attracted to like physical. I would say I'm asexual, just based on I've never looked at anyone and been like, I want to fuck that person. But he has never not been there for me. Like when I find him, like because we get, you know, we go our separate ways or whatever. But when we find each other, it's like we never left off. He's just there. And, like, it doesn't matter if I look like shit. It doesn't matter if I'm – it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter if – what the situation is. He always has my back. Always. Always, always, always. It doesn't matter if I'm super wrong. Like, super fucking wrong. PMSing. Super wrong. He has my back. He might pull me aside later and be like, babe, you're being kind of a bitch. But he would never say the B word. But that's what he's – nicely saying, eloquently saying to me, but he would never in front of people tell me anything even close to that. It would never be. It's he tells me he if I said the sky's purple, shut the fuck up, guys. The sky's purple. He'd be like, it's purple. Mm-hmm. Deal with it. Yeah. And I'd be like, babe, this sky's not really purple. Maybe we should go back and talk about this with them.
What do you guys worry about now? What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of not being able to take care of. I'm afraid of not being able to be successful enough to get him out of the funk that he's in. But I also love him for exactly who he is now. So I'm also afraid of, I guess, not wanting to change him, but encouraging him to change when I feel I should love him for exactly who he is. But if he doesn't want to be who he is right now, then that's like where it's two different things, dichotomy. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what scares me. I'm scared I'm going to find out that one time I'm not going to meet up with him because he's just, you know, someone wasn't there that took care of him and he died or got arrested or, I don't really want to talk about that.
Let me ask you guys one last question. What would you say is the most important lesson you've learned in your lives?
What was
to
it?
To always be helpful.
Most important lesson you've learned in your life?
To always be helpful.
To always help others. Because I've been mean, you know, throughout my life. And I just try to be a nicer person.
I would say to everyone has something to teach me. No matter how stupid someone seems by society standards, everyone has something to teach me. And that if you give people the benefit of the doubt and you put them to the challenge of being a good person, they might disappoint you a few times, but more often than you'd think, they'll come through. And most of all, just treat others how you'd want to be treated, man. It's the golden rule. And you can only control yourself. I wish I could control him and make him happy, but You can only control yourself, and by controlling yourself and making yourself happy, hopefully you can influence others into being happy.
You know? And I mean, like, I'm happy, you know, it's just, I'm not happy a lot of the times because I want my son and my daughter back, you know, and I can't get them back. And I miss my son a lot.
But mourning for them in a way that, and I know I can't even speak on it because I can't even imagine the pain you go through, but mourning for them in a way that is sad and, you know, like self, like fucking yourself up is not honoring their memory. You know what I mean? You honor them by being happy and being better and being, you know, everything they would want you to be. Live for them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Be happy for them. Be in their peace. No crying. You're not allowed, only me. Only I can cry. Just kidding.
All right. You guys are a very interesting couple.
Thank you.
Dylan and Christina, thank you so much for sharing your stories.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.